You're listening to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the DFS Karma Podcast Network. Now here's your host with the most, Jack Caparuccio.
Welcome back to the No Cap Podcast, powered by the Karma Media Network. I'm your host, Jack Caparuccio, aka Clinic Cap on Twitter. This is episode number 15 of the No Cap Podcast. We're keeping things short and sweet today with the news and fantasy impact only episode. Because there's so much news that has happened in what feels like the last week, but has really been the last couple days, I'm doing news only for this one, and the most important fantasy impacts that you need to take away from this news. If you want to see my starts, sits, and weekly rankings, head over to dfskarma.com to read up. If you need Dynasty help, feel free to join our free Discord at dfskarma.com, and you'll get direct access to me and the rest of the experts with our Fantasy Football Karma Season Pass Plus. Head over to dfskarma.com to check that out in more detail. Let's get right into it. First piece of news, OBJ is still looking for a team. We all know he cleared waivers. We all know he got cut from the Browns. And the top teams in his mind, I guess, are Kansas City Chiefs, New Orleans Saints, Green Bay Packers, and on the outside looking in is New England Patriots are supposedly, reportedly, showing heavy interest in OBJ. Now, I know that OBJ at this point, at least in my opinion, is more name than impact. So that begs the question, is he a buy or is he a sell in Dynasty? Because he's in this kind of limbo where he's not with a team. We just saw him for upwards of 2 years not really have a whole lot of consistent fantasy impact on a low passing volume team in the Cleveland Browns, not good chemistry with Baker, dealing with injuries. We've seen all of it. We know it. So what do you do with him in Dynasty? Now, I'm somebody who has had OBJ on a lot of rosters, and because I'm in probably 5 to 6 different Dynasty leagues. And I want to say about a year ago, I went on a buying spree because I perceived it as all-time low for OBJ. I thought, well, another year with Baker, he might be good. Maybe he'll be healthy. I'm going to buy low. And I didn't pay a lot for him. It was usually something like a younger prospect that wasn't starting in my lineup or a later second round pick, something along those lines. People were really desperate to sell off OBJ and frustrated because of the injuries. But if you have OBJ on your roster, I'm still looking to sell. I'm not looking to buy him. I think that this creates this unknown of what OBJ is and what he's going to do and where he's going to go has created a buy window for a lot of people, or a sell window, I should say, sorry. A sell window on your end because it could get worse. I know we don't know. We haven't seen that it's gotten worse. We think that this is the perceived low, but twice in a row now, he has been practically run out of the city that he's, you know, playing football in. That's not good. And we know he's dealt with injuries. He's already dealt with them this year. And I don't think at this point the talent matches the name. Now, will he have his flash games? Yes, absolutely. I still believe that. I still believe he can have his multi-touchdown big boom games, but I don't think he's going to be consistent, you know? And out of these destinations, I still don't necessarily want the Packers because I don't believe OBJ A is a fit with Rodgers and with the rest of the personalities there at this time. I don't think it's a fit. And I don't see the target share being there to warrant him as a startable fantasy asset. I don't believe that Rodgers in, you know, his quote-unquote revenge year, basically, in Green Bay, is just going to stop hyper-targeting Davante Adams, a strategy that has proven to be effective for actually winning football games and for fantasy value. I don't think that's just going to stop. And reportedly, the Packers have offered him the veteran's minimum contract, which says that they're just kind of putting an effort out there to show that, yeah, oh, we were in on OBJ, but that's not a real serious offer. I think they're just doing that to please Rodgers, in all honesty. Now, Kansas City, and this is a quote from Fantasy Footballer's Andy Holloway, has not had a relevant wide receiver 2 for fantasy since the Bush administration. And that's true. Go look it up. And it's because the 1A, 1B in the Kansas City offense is obviously Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. And you can flip-flop those two as much as you want. As long as those two are around, it's going to be hard to sustain a wide receiver 2 for fantasy. And it's not because the wide receiver 2 there isn't good. I mean, the Mecole Hardman thing has run its course, I think. I think we can all stop talking about that. But I'm not sure. I think OBJ becomes just more of a Sammy Watkins if he goes there. You know, Sammy Watkins, what did he do? You know, weeks 1 and like 16, he would blow up for his 2 touchdown games. You go, oh my gosh, Sammy Watkins is back. Because if you remember, Sammy Watkins was a hyper-talented wide receiver, highly drafted as well, with good athleticism. Very similar to OBJ. Didn't have the production early on that OBJ did, but in terms of pure athleticism and the type of player, they're very similar. And could you start Watkins every week? Nope. And he dealt with injuries. It's a very similar picture to me, so I'm not... I understand the allure of going with Patrick Mahomes, you know, arm talent, all of that. I get that. And I think that for pure NFL wins from their standpoint, it probably would help the offense. But from a fantasy perspective, doesn't interest me a whole lot. New Orleans Saints, though, they do interest me because I'm of the belief that Michael Thomas isn't going to play again this season, right? I think it had been reported that he was done for the season. I don't think we ever see him in a New Orleans jersey ever again in his career. He's like the new AJ Green. I think he wants out. So the target share would be there for OBJ, I think, regardless of who's at quarterback. I think New Orleans is a great fit for both, you know, him himself and for fantasy managers. I think that, you know, Sean Payton would scheme things. They'd make sure he has a pretty high target share. I like the fit, no matter, even if it's Taysom Hill at quarterback. If you remember, Taysom Hill had a 70% plus passer or accuracy on passes last year, and that was, you know, hyper-targeting Michael Thomas when he was still in the lineup, and the other carousel of wide receivers that have come through. So it's not that he can't get the ball to people. Now, the Patriots actually interest me the most out of all these destinations, and it's because of how Mac Jones has looked. Mac Jones has been, you know, highly accurate. He's not making a ton of mistakes. He does make a couple throws per game that say, yeah, he's a rookie, like, as he should look, but he's been much better than people believe. And the Patriots are contenders now. They had a rough stretch in the beginning of the year where they were losing all of these close, almost single-score games right in a row. But now they're firmly back in a wild card hunt. Maybe could win the division if they go on a nice run. And, you know, if the Bills do keep slipping, it's realistic. And the Patriots don't have this, you know, wide receiver one prototype type of guy in the offense. They have Kendrick Bourne, Nelson Aguilar. They use their tight ends heavily, but they don't have the guy that they can just hyper-target. And like I said, I don't think the talent is there for OBJ, but I still think he can play that role on occasion. And it could be, you know, attractive to him because they could say, you know, we want you to be the guy. We want you to be number one. And for him, I think that matters. So we will see. I would anticipate something coming soon. But if you have OBJ, I would try and sell him now. Because if he signs somewhere like a Kansas City, and in a couple of weeks he doesn't do anything, it is going to be impossible to get him off of your dynasty roster. Darn near impossible. And for redraft, he's probably more of a boom-bust wide receiver 3 for me at this point, regardless of where he goes. Next piece of news is Sam Darnold is headed to the IR out 4 to 6 weeks with a fracture, an incomplete fracture, mind you, just like most of his passes this last year. PJ Walker is expected to start, but the team is reportedly exploring all options at quarterback. Now, that would have been great to do when they were in prime position to draft Justin Fields or Mac Jones in the actual NFL draft. They should have explored all their options then. And now they're on the hook for the guaranteed Sam Darnold fifth-year contract that they picked up. Now, we could see a Brock Osweiler happen and they basically sell Darnold to buy a draft pick. I could totally see that happening at this point because I don't think he's the guy for them. It faded fast. They had a pretty easy schedule to start the season. Teams figured it out. Konami Sam, him rushing 2 touchdowns a game did not last like we had talked about. It was prone to regression and it came hard. And this team, it looks lost whenever CMC isn't on the field. And there's direct correlation between CMC going down and Darnold starting to perform, you know, more poorly because the defense can key in pretty much on one thing or one or two guys. So I think actually if you're a DJ Moore manager, Robbie Anderson manager, I think this is probably good for you. I think that we really can't do much worse than how bad Darnold has been these last few weeks. PJ Walker has been a competent backup when he's played. So I think Walker will get the ball to guys and get them to the most talented guys in the offense and let them do what they can do with it. You know, give your playmakers the ball and let them make plays. So I think that, you know, this is a slight bump up for DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, who's been getting tons of targets, but not connecting on them, as we saw with the visible frustration from Robbie Anderson screaming at Sam Darnold, probably saying, I wish you would have stayed in New York. Why did you follow me here? joking, but still, the Panthers, I think, are looking towards next year. There's not much they can really do at this point at quarterback because the trade deadline's gone. So they kind of just have to go after waiver wire options, a scrap heap that's out there. It's not looking pretty. Alvin Kamara did not practice today with what's reported to be a knee and a shoulder injury. So this popped up. I've been trying to find out who they signed because I saw a report out there earlier today that the Saints signed a depth running back today, which does not bode well for Alvin Kamara suiting up this Sunday. And this is one of those surprise things where we really didn't hear about it much until after the games, and he's apparently dealing with an injury. And if you're a Kamara manager, you have to be sweating. And if you don't have Mark Ingram as a backup, you have to be sweating more. And the thing with Kamara is if, let's say, they declare Taysom Hill starter because Taysom Hill took over in the game because Trevor Siemian was struggling. If Kamara does play, and he's not healthy, right? We know that now. And Taysom Hill's a starter, then it downgrades the outlook for Kamara. Because, as we know, Kamara thrives off checkdowns. But the other side of it is they have been using Kamara more in a regular running back role, meaning, you know, in between the tackle stuff, giving him 20 carries. We've seen that more this year. So rushing quarterbacks tend to lead to higher efficiency for running backs in their rushing game. But the problem is we saw Alvin Kamara have his lowest snap share as soon as Mark Ingram got back in town. So it's muddy waters. It's murky. And if you're a Kamara manager, you might be looking to trade high after this last performance to get, you know, let's say it's like a Darrell Henderson and a Justin Jefferson back in return, something like that in a redraft league. I think that's fair. And I think I would do that at this point because Alvin Kamara is Alvin Kamara, right? He's going to have his big games. And I'm not saying he's not talented, but the situation is worsening because of the quarterback situation and the fact that they have an insistence now to get Mark Ingram involved again, who we thought was dust, and now he's not dust again. And if Kamara is to miss time, let's say he doesn't suit up Sunday, I think Mark Ingram slots in your lineup as a solid RB2, albeit touchdown dependent. We have this Dalvin Cook lawsuit going on, right? And as it plays out, I would highly suggest if you're a Dalvin Cook manager to have Alexander Mattison on standby, have him on the bench, because this is one of those situations where I could certainly see him going to the commissioner's exempt list. In the meantime, if they start doing a formal investigation into this, he has reportedly not gotten in contact with the NFL yet and is supposed to play week 10, but I'm not sure how the NFL doesn't get involved at this point. Mike White is starting again for the Jets, which is great news for the Jets pass catchers, and especially Michael Carter. Michael Carter should be a locked-in RB2 in all of your lineups in a full PPR league. We've already seen the upside. Mike White has turned into Johnny Checkdown, and he will just check it down over and over and over again to Michael Carter. And that's awesome. And it's also awesome for guys like Elijah Moore, Corey Davis whenever the heck he comes back in the lineup, Jameson Crowder. We've seen that it's better for this offense because Mike White just takes what's there. So bump up on all of your Jets. Cleveland Browns' Nick Chubb has a positive COVID test, and so does Demetric Felton. But there's still a possibility to play this week since they're vaccinated. So they need, I believe it's 2 negative tests before kickoff if they're going to play. So monitor that situation closely. But if they can't go, Dearness Johnson becomes a locked-in RB2. We already saw what he can do in prime time. I think that because of how heavily this team is built around the run, Johnson's going to be involved regardless. But if those two miss time, then you have to put him in your lineup. Chase Claypool is reportedly dealing with a toe injury, and there's no timeline on the injury. He had an MRI, and all they've really said is that it's not expected to be season-ending. So that's not exactly a vote of confidence for fantasy managers. So I don't expect him to play this weekend, but if you're a Deontay Johnson manager, things get interesting because he can see even more targets, but I think it gets even more interesting for Pat Freiermuth managers, who the man was just the tight end one overall this last week for fantasy because he had 2 touchdowns. And everyone's saying, you know, he's Big Ben's new Heath Miller, and it's looking like it's true. Big Ben is targeting the crap out of him, and it is extremely impressive to see for a rookie tight end because we know they don't typically produce for fantasy. They're usually not reliable. But if Claypool misses time, I think that Freiermuth is going to be even more of a presence in the red zone and take over a little bit of that role. Obviously, another wide receiver will come in and try to play that, but I think Freiermuth stands to benefit the most in terms of fantasy from this one. The Detroit Lions have claimed Josh Reynolds off of waivers from the Titans, and Lord knows the Lions need as much wide receiver help as they can get. I have to painfully watch those games every Sunday, and they need help. And Josh Reynolds does have a rapport with Jared Goff from their time on the Rams together. You know, Josh Reynolds is not some world-beating talent or anything, but I would expect him to slot as the wide receiver two on this team behind Khalif Raymond. So he's worth a speculative add in deeper leagues. I don't think he's start-worthy or anything like that unless he becomes Goff's favorite target and has like a 30% plus target share in a full PPR league. Then you can start considering it. Tampa Bay Buccaneers have signed Breshad Perriman and Darren Fells. Now, I think that this one is more of an indication about the health of the wide receiver core, meaning Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, and the health of Rob Gronkowski, because Rob Gronkowski is still missing practice. Antonio Brown just got out of the walking boot that he was in, but Chris Godwin popped up on the injury report, and he's not practicing this week because of a foot injury. So I think that these are depth signings for the team. I don't see any fantasy relevance at this point, but it's something to monitor of the overall situation of how the Bucs feel about their injured players. The Texans have claimed running back Royce Freeman off of waivers from the Carolina Panthers, as if they needed another meh running back. Now their running back room is David Johnson, Royce Freeman, Rex Burkhead, Scottie Phillips, who just went on IR, and Phillip Lindsay. It's like the five horsemen of mediocrity. It's awful. And the insistence on giving one person randomly, I swear they roll the dice or they pick a name out of the hat in the locker room before every game. They say, you're going to get the highest snap share and carry share today. Have fun. Like, this seems to be how they picked. It's completely unpredictable. The offense stinks. So I'm not looking to play any of these guys unless I'm purely out of desperation. Like, I mean, you know, everyone's on bye and my waiver wire is barren desperation. Kyler Murray is expected to play this weekend off of his ankle injury. DeAndre Hopkins' status is still up in the air with a hamstring. He's day-to-day. AJ Green remains out on COVID-19 protocol. And now Rondale Moore is not practicing due to concussion. All of this equals Christian Kirk stonks. We saw Christian Kirk do really well last week with all these guys out of the lineup and even with Moore on the field. But Kirk has had a mini, you know, post-hype sleeper breakout. He's looked like this year's version of Corey Davis and the year before that, Devontae Parker, where, you know, guy with high hype continues to disappoint for fantasy and then emerges as a high ceiling wide receiver too. And that's what Kirk has been. So if Murray plays and all these other guys are out or hampered by injuries, you know, I think Kirk has to be in your lineups. You can trust him as a wide receiver too. And that's around where he's finished most of the year. So it's really good to see players that, you know, we hyped up for a long time finally coming around at the last second. Chicago Bears' Justin Fields is starting to come around as well. Speaking of, he's finally looking a little more comfortable. He's finally delivering some of those big throws that we knew he could do. We saw it in prime time. And could we be in store for second half fantasy breakout? Now, I'm always skeptical when Matt Nagy's involved because he could just hold him back, right? We already saw that before. But Fields is running more, which is upping his fantasy floor. So Fields is the type of guy, even a regular 10-team league, I would probably stash him at the back of your bench because he truly could have a second half fantasy breakout with the rushing. If the offense continues to come around and has looked a little bit better in recent weeks and they just got David Montgomery back, I really do think he could have a second half breakout and could potentially be one of those, you know, fantasy playoff gems for you if you make it in. Damien Harris and Ramondre Stevenson did not practice on Wednesday due to concussions, both of them. So I'm not sure if they're going to play. I hope they don't. I hope they give them the proper time to sit out and recover. And in the meantime, you have to pivot to Brandon Bolden and JJ Taylor. Now, knowing the Patriots, I'll say both these guys, and then they will find your local grocery store bagger and hand them the rock 20 times on Sunday. That's just how the Patriots work. But in all seriousness, if you're in a PPR league, Brandon Bolden's my preference here. We've seen that he's fulfilled this James White type of role where it's checkdowns, everything like that. And it's funny because he had never really done that in his career previously. I think he's 31 years old now. So Patriots always do stuff like this. But if you have to pick one of these two, I'm going with Bolden for the passing upside. Tua is questionable for this Thursday's game, and the team is expected to start Jacoby Brissett again. Now, it doesn't sound exciting on paper, but Brissett has been serviceable in the games he's played. I think this is great for Jaylen Waddle and Mike Gesicki, particularly because they're the only two options in this offense. Devontae Parker's on IR, Will Fuller still hasn't come off IR, and Waddle has this disgustingly low ADOT because he's basically just getting, you know, glorified checkdowns, which for target share, for PPR leagues, awesome. Makes him super safe with some upside because he can always break one. And Mike Gesicki has just been continually dominant as a tight end because of the role he plays in this offense as a de facto slot wide receiver. So start both of them with confidence. The wild card here is Myles Gaskin, who has been a little more consistent in recent weeks. But if you look at his splits, game-by-game basis, full PPR, he's only startable every other week. He goes single-digit, double-digit, single-digit, double-digit in terms of points. So last week, he had double digits. So the rule of Myles Gaskin this year would tell you he's going to have single digits next week. But I honestly think with Brissett in at quarterback, if that's the case, he'll probably check it down more, and Gaskin's a safe RB3 to RB low-end RB2 this week, in my opinion. James Robinson of the Jacksonville Jaguars is still not practicing to that heel injury. They do expect him to suit up, but it's not encouraging for it to be halfway through the week and he's still not practicing. I'd monitor it. We obviously saw what happened with Carlos Hyde last week, who, you know, was solid considering the fact that he went against the number one rushing D in the league. So if you have to pivot off of Robinson, you can do so with Hyde this week. I'm not expecting anything crazy, but the landscape is barren for running backs. Let's be real. Cardinals running back Chase Edmonds is out 4 to 6 weeks with a high ankle sprain. So everyone's running around the world screaming, James Conner league winner. I told you, I knew it. When in reality, there was a camp of people, myself included, who thought James Conner would be a value in drafts. I have on the record, you can look it up on Twitter. You can type in my name and type in James Conner next to it. And it'll say, I believe James Conner is the better value than Chase Edmonds in this backfield, almost verbatim. But me saying and others saying that James Conner is going to be a value does not mean we expect James Conner to get a touchdown on 30% of his rushing attempts. No one was saying that. Most people were saying he's a good dart throw because, you know, we've seen him do well before in this type of role and type of goal line work. We thought he's going to get the Kenyon Drake role that was previously there, and that is what happened. But now he has, you know, full workload because we saw he was given a workhorse load last week as soon as Chase Edmonds went down, and he smashed for fantasy. He probably won somebody $1 million in the Millie Maker in DFS, something like that, or on a bet. But when has James Conner held up to a workhorse role in his career? Sustained over multiple games. And I'm not talking talent. James Conner has got the talent to do it. We've seen it. I'm talking about durability. And this is not to bark on the injury-prone thing. But guys like James Conner worry me because we have not seen him once hold up to a full workload in his career. Always gets soft tissue injuries. He always has this nagging thing where he's not as effective, and then he doesn't look as explosive, and then he doesn't look as efficient as a runner, right? It's happened multiple times. So I'm not saying don't start James Conner. Start James Conner with confidence as long as Edmonds is out. I'm saying you need to be aware that there is a real possibility Conner gets hurt as well, or Conner has some lingering thing going on, and that you need to stash Eno Benjamin. And what people don't realize about Eno Benjamin is he had a rushing touchdown last week. The entire Cardinals offense without Kyler Murray was just clicking on all cylinders, especially in the rushing attack. And Eno Benjamin had a usable fantasy week. Obviously, nobody started him because he's Eno Benjamin. He's like third string running back. But he was usable, and they are reportedly saying they're going to work Benjamin in more because of what I'm talking about. They don't want to overload Conner, and I really do think that in deeper leagues, he'll probably have some flex potential. And, forbid Conner gets hurt. I don't want him to get hurt. Let me get that out of the way. But if he does, then Eno Benjamin gets this role, and he has some pop. He has some explosiveness. He can get it done. And we have to remember with all of this that all of these rushing touchdowns came last week without Kyler Murray, who, as we know, has rushing upside himself and vultures these touchdowns. And James Conner's had high touchdowns all year. We've seen multi-touchdowns game from him already, so it's not saying that's not going to happen, but it's saying when Kyler Murray is back in full health, it's more likely that they're going to have less rushing work for these two running backs. And, you know, Murray is still dealing with that ankle injury, so I don't expect that to happen right away, but it's something down the stretch to keep in mind. Latavius Murray is not expected to play in Thursday's matchup between the Ravens and Dolphins, which, in my opinion, makes Devonta Freeman a viable start at running back. And I almost threw up my mouth saying that because it sounds so gross. Freeman's old. We didn't expect this. The Ravens' backfield was a mess. But, you know, in recent weeks, Freeman has been solid. So with how bad the running back landscape is and decimated with injuries, he probably becomes a pretty low, you know, safe floor RB2 in your lineups if you're in PPR. And I totally see it. Dolphins run D is not great. So I think he's a good start for you. Jamal Williams of the Detroit Lions did not practice today. He's still dealing with the injury out of the bye week, and that's not good. So I'm at this point, I would expect them to probably wait and see with him, rest him, because they're a losing team. What's the point of pounding him to the ground, right? So obviously good for DeAndre Swift's fantasy usage. He'll get probably a workhorse role, but it's definitely something to monitor. If Williams does go at all, I expect it to be in limited capacity and not a lot of touches. Speaking of running backs still dealing with injuries, Antonio Gibson is still dealing with his injury out of the bye week. The guy's been hurt since like week one. I honestly wish the Washington football team would just shut him down for the season. Give the guy the rest he needs. They're not some Super Bowl roster, right? They're a quarterback away, and we all know it. So why run this guy into the ground and keep getting him hurt with new things or re-aggravating the old things when you could just rest him? Rest him for good. Let him heal up. This is a centerpiece of their future. And I don't understand why they keep running him into the ground. So if Antonio Gibson goes, I'm not trying to start him, because we've seen that he has been markedly worse since he got injured. He was great before this, but he doesn't look the same as he's injured, as he shouldn't, because he's probably dealing with significant injury. So if you have Gibson, you have to hold him, and I think I'm holding him on my bench. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has been designated to return from injured reserve. He's resumed practice this week, and now it opens up the window for him to come back. It's apparently limited capacity. He's been practicing, but keep this in mind. I think that when CEH comes back, I think what's going to happen is we still see more of a committee approach, because Darrell Williams has looked really solid. And, you know, I think it'll be more of a 50-50 split. So just keep that in mind as CEH progresses through this injury. Chris Carson is also designated to return from IR. And this one's a little bit different, because I think if Carson's healthy enough to play at least, I think the Seahawks will give him majority share of the work. We've seen throughout Pete Carroll's coaching career with the Seahawks, and when he has a running back he likes, he gives them the majority share. And Rashad Penny has not been lighting the world on fire, so to speak, with his 7 carries for 7 yards last week. So I think Carson's going to get the majority of the work, and I think he should be right back in your fantasy lineups if he does. And Russell Wilson's back, which helps all of the Seahawks offense all over the place. That's it for today's show. Make sure to follow me on Twitter @ClinicCap. And if you like the show, be sure to like and subscribe or follow the show anywhere podcasts can be found so you never miss an episode, and leave a quick review if you'd be so kind. If you want to directly ask me questions about fantasy football, sports betting, dynasty leagues, or life in general, head over to dfskarma.com to join our free chat room where you can talk to me nearly 24/7, 365. If you want even more fantasy help and access to your proprietary tools, you can go get it over at Fantasy Football Karma Season Pass today at dfskarma.com. I'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the No Cap Podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and review anywhere podcasts can be found.